Recordings have started. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the IRTP Part D Working Group call on the 5th of May, 2014. On the call today, we have James Bladel, Barbara Knight, Angie Graves, Avery Doria, Bob Mountain, and Graham Bunton. We have apologies from Holly Raich, Paul Diaz, and Volker Grimmen. From staff, we have Amy Bivens, Lars Hoffman, Barry Cobb, Steve Chan, and myself, Terry Agnew. I'd like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, James.
Thank you, and welcome everyone to the IRTPD Working Group call for May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, 2014. If we could, please, as our per our usual SOP, if anyone has any updates to their SOIs, could you please indicate so by raising your hand in the Adobe room or get my attention on the call? Seeing none, we'll move on then to the draft agenda that was very simple there. That is items 1 through 4 circulated by Lars earlier on the list and is posted there in the right-hand column. Any comments or suggestions on that? Okay. I think that that agenda will work for this call. I think that at some point, however, we're going to get to a place where we're going to need a I guess we would call it a second pass review of some of these comments to make sure that we, all of the little place markers and follow-up items that we, breadcrumbs that we left for ourselves are picked up. But I think that we probably have a few more comments to get through before we can begin our second pass, so we'll start with that. So as we left our heroes, we were reviewing comments from Lars. Can you help me which one we are on? I believe 13 does not look familiar. Does that mean that we completed up through 12?
Yeah, James, this is Lars. This is correct. I'm just going to scroll up here. This is the last one we did. And then I scrolled it down to number 13, which is where we should start today. I'm going to release the file as well so everybody can scroll through by themselves.
Thank you, Lars. Appreciate scroll and zoom control. Okay, so we'll start with 13, and we'll see how far we can get today. It looks like there are 30 actual comments, so we're just about halfway through, although some of them certainly take longer than others. So I think that'll probably consume the bulk of the call today. So questions 13 and 14, or comments 13 and 14, involve our recommendation number 6, where the working group recommends that if an RFE is initiated under the TDRP, that the relevant domain name should be locked against further transfers. The TDRP, as well as guidelines to registrars, registries, third-party dispute providers, should be modified accordingly. We have a note here from staff. It might be useful to add this lock under the basis for denial of transfers. So just off the cuff, I think that is correct. I believe one of the existing reasons for denial includes locks for UDRP. Is that correct? Lars, is anybody?
Yeah, James, this
okay,
is Lars. I just pulled this up. This is the reason of denial. Extracted that from the IRTP as it stands. There's the web reference at the top as well.
Yeah, so it's reason for denial number 2, UDRP action. So I think that it would be reasonable to expect that we could say UDRP or TDRP action. That, if that makes sense. I think this is a good suggestion, and possibly something, a note that could be left for the implementation of this recommendation is that it would simply be added in there. The only concern I have here, and maybe we can capture this in our response, is that as we've discussed in previous working groups, reasons for denial are reasons where a registrar may NAC a transfer request. But I think a domain name lock is a situation where a registrar must NAC a transfer request. And if that's what we're going for, then I agree, to cover all of our bases, we need to have it in the reasons for denial, but I think that we also need to have it explicitly described in the TDRP section of the policy, because otherwise, we don't want registrars treating that as optional, as my, or do we? I don't think we do, but, you know, I think that that's what we would be saying if this were the only place where the loss is provided for. Christine has a point about adding TDRP, then we should add URS as well. I think that is probably correct. I would have to take a look at the URS policy. And I think this is a bit of a tangent, but it is an important one, and we should be consistent as possible. So maybe we'll mark that as a takeaway. So it's just one little sentence here, Lars, but I think comment number 13 has generated a couple of different action items for staff. Does anyone else have any thoughts on comment number 13 and whether the locking of the TDRP domain name should be included? Does anyone object to it being included here? Let's maybe put it that way. Okay. So I don't see any hands there. I think my only concern is that it can't only be there if our intention is to make it mandatory. So moving then to comment number 14. The registries support this recommendation. Some TDLD registries currently have a practice of locking domain name by applying server transfer prohibited, server delete prohibited, and server update prohibited to the domain name upon receipt of a RFP. In those cases, the lock remains in place for the pendency of the case, including the period of time that the domain name dispute is appealed to the second level dispute resolution provider if the non-prevailing party elects to appeal the decision. So this, I think, is in line with a comment that Christine has posted into the chat, which is if the lock is applied to the by the registry, then does it matter? The answer is that the registrar is unable to initiate a transfer anyway. So the registrar locking at the registrar level seems redundant, but certainly would cover us in case they were, let's say, if this were inconsistently implemented across all the dozens or hundreds of new registries we see popping up. And Bob is pointing out that we're all learning a new word today, pendency. I like that. Any thoughts, reactions, or questions here? I think this is more of an informative comment than a challenge, except for the first part, which generally supports the recommendation. Okay. Christine is noting in the chat that the UDRP blocking working group added and defined that term. I believe you mean the term pendency, Christine? Is that correct?
Yes, that's exactly what I mean.
Okay, yeah. So that is a defined term under the UDRP locking working group, which has been completed and approved and is currently pending implementation. So, okay. Moving on then, our next comment is comment number 15, recommendation 7. Working group recommends not to develop dispute options for registrants as part of the current TDRP. One comment on this, and I was surprised it was only one, but here it is. It's from the BC. BC believes there must be a mechanism for registrants to initiate proceedings when registrars decline to initiate them. BC supports the details of our position on charter question C. They're encompassed in recommendation 8 and 9. So, I'm going to put, do we have, no, Kevin is not on the call. I'm not sure who else on this working group is coming from the BC, but, you know, I think that this is, you know, there's no other way to position it. This is, you know, diametrically opposed to where we landed as a working group, and I think where a lot of us landed anyway. I don't know if it was unanimous. It seemed to be that it was the, kind of the prevailing discussions once we untangled a lot of the issues associated with this recommendation. I'm curious about how the working group wants to proceed, whether we want to reopen this issue, whether we want to maybe put some of the issues raised by the BC under a microscope and take a closer look. Did we miss something? Christine.
Hi, this is Christine from NAPS. I just wanted to I thought, and I'm trying to scroll through and see where it is, but I thought ultimately we ended up recommending that we recommend to the GNSO that if, you know, the BC or whoever believes that some mechanism should be developed for registrants, that there be a different PDP for that. So something where we actually talk about that, you know, that specific issue. Does anybody else remember what I'm talking about there?
Thanks, Christine. I don't see any other hands going up. Does anyone else? Graham is agreeing as well. You know, I kind of would turn to staff and say, do we have something to that effect in our report? Was that captured in any of our subsequent recommendations? Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, James, sorry, I haven't been as active recently just because of some work obligations, but I, from prior discussions, I thought that the escalation process was non-ICANN and was, you know, through commercial or legal route. Is am I misremembering, or was that the alternative?
It's a good question, Bob. I don't remember myself. I know that we had fairly long, lengthy, and diverse discussions around this topic, and I think that we floated a lot of different ideas. I think that was possibly one of them. I think Christine and Graham are also remembering the idea of a second PDP, although I don't see us formally recommending that. I do see us making some recommendations to the implementation of a previous PDP. Could that have been it, Christine and Graham, or are we thinking of, are we on two different tracks here?
Well, this is Christine from NAF, and I don't remember anything involving changes to a previous PDP, but I do remember a lot of discussions surrounding this idea that if the GNSO considered that that was still a problem, then we'd have to figure out under what bucket. I wonder whether this would be an entirely new policy, because UDRP is for trademark infringement. Most of the registrant complaints aren't trademark infringement. The TDRP is for registrar, you know, violation between registrars of transfer policy, and there's no really no place for registrants there. So there would be a whole separate thing, as was my recollection.
Thank you, Christine. I think that just reading Recommendation 8, I think that it is perhaps encompassed in that second half. Here where it says something about inter-registrant transfer recommendations, when they are implemented, they should include appropriate dispute resolution mechanisms. The IRTPC and IRTPD implementation review team should determine whether the inter-registrant transfer use cases documented in the appendix, have been addressed. If there are use cases that have not been addressed by the implementation of IRTPC, and the implementation review teams are charged with formulating a request for an issues report to review the remaining use cases. I think that's where we're getting the new PDP, because an issues report is essentially the first step. And consider whether any additional dispute resolution mechanisms or changes to the TDRP should be developed, but that request should then be forwarded to the GNSO Council for consideration. So I think that that bit there about the requesting the issues report for any uncovered use cases is tackling is tackling that issue as far as setting up a new PDP or teeing one up if the implementation of IRTPC is not covered. I see green check mark from Christine. Graham, is that where you're thinking we're coming from as well? Does that jive with your...
That sounds... that's about where I'm coming from.
Okay. I think that the concern I have here is that the BC, if you take a look at this comment or the excerpt of their comment, is that there must be a mechanism for registrants to initiate proceedings when a registrar is declined to initiate them. So that is, that is specifically talking about TDRP, where a registrar has declined to initiate them. So I believe our response should be something like this. you know, we the working group discussed this at length and determined that since the TDRP effectively covers non-compliant transfers between registrars, that the registrant would not necessarily be a party to those disputes. However, the working group also determined that the IRTPC inter-registrant transfer provisions would be an appropriate place for this dispute mechanism, and that if these issues were not addressed, then, new issue report, new PDP, blah, blah, blah. So something like making sure to redirect this particular comment or the question to, not to the TDRP, but to that inter-registrant dispute. That's one potential path forward as far as a working group response to comment 15. Christine.
This is Christine from NAF. And I thought that what we had decided there was that there was a complete, Barry's putting it in the chat right now. I think we decided, or we at least discussed in detail, that that was a compliance function. If you've got a registrar, so we were going to put some, I remember Mikey talking about this, we were going to put some sort of language into place or on ICANN's website or something that said if you are a registrant and your registrar isn't bringing a dispute and you feel that they should, then you need to let ICANN know or click here and here we'll give you your options or something because I know the registrars are really concerned that they don't want to be forced to bring a dispute that they don't think is, has merit, but at the same time we have to do something for where there are registrars that are just purposely being jerks about not bringing a dispute because they don't want to deal with it. So there was a discussion about compliance function. And the problem I know is right now, and I just went through this the other day with another registry or another registrant, where I can't even find on ICANN's site where to report a registrar that's not taking a registrant's claim seriously. That, my domain's been stolen, you let it transfer out of my account without my permission, whatever it is. I mean, and I'm sure that's not a TDRP dispute, but I couldn't even find where to direct them to. So it may just be a matter of beefing up ICANN's site and, being a little bit more clear on the compliance site about what they can and can't help with.
Okay, thanks, Christine, and thanks, Barry. I do remember that now. I think that Mikey, when he raised that issue, touched on that fairly succinctly when he was explaining that a lot of these elements associated with this use case are covered under existing policy and therefore are not a matter for dispute or new policy, but in fact are a matter of compliance enforcing the existing obligations on registrars. So I think Barry has put a link in the chat there. Barry, can you help me here? Is that a link to the complaint submission that Christine was referencing?
Hi, James. Yes, that is true.
Okay, thanks. Christine, I don't know if that helps, but so I think that, Lars, if we can kind of capture some or most of what I was saying, but we need to also address this idea that, registrants are not powerless necessarily. It's not a given that they need to dispute a process if they believe the registrar is not following the existing policy. They can raise the issue with ICANN compliance, their contractual compliance, to enforce their existing obligation. So there's a chat going on right now regarding that submission of complaints, but we'll move on. So what? Any other thoughts or parting thoughts here about the BC comment number 15? I think that we have pass to address them. I mean, certainly we're going to have to do a read-through on our second pass, but it sounds like pointing out that the TDRP is really an inter-registrar dispute, that there is an upcoming inter-registrant process that needs a dispute mechanism that compliance can enforce the existing policy obligations if they're raised by registrants who believe that registrars are not living up to those, and that we have a mechanism in part of our recommendations to capture any uncovered use cases that were identified as part of this process and formulate a request for an issues report. So I think that's our that's how we navigate our way through this issue. Okay, I'm certain that we'll be able to talk about that again when we come back through our second pass. So let's move on to recommendation 8. Is that actually a comment there, Lars? Because I don't see it. I have a blank by number 16. Do you see it on yours?
Sorry, I was on mute. No, I think I just moved it up. There was no comment on 8. On 16, it should have been blank. I apologize for that.
That's fine. And as we already kind of unpacked, the second half of recommendation number 8 is where we point out that any use cases that remain unaddressed could be the subject of future PDP. So, moving on then to number 17. And recommendation 9. Recommendation 9, the working group recommends that the TDRP be modified to eliminate first level layer of the TDRP. So registries would be off the hook. And, you know, Barbara could get a little more sleep at night. Recommendation 17 is from the registry stakeholder group. The registry is supportive of this recommendation for several reasons. First, the number of GTLDs and registry operators increases potential inconsistencies in the interpretation and administration of the TDRP is likely to occur. Second, the expense that registry operators incur to have staff with expertise to process and render decisions in dispute cases is not justified by the small number of disputes that are raised at the first level. Third, other ICANN dispute policies, specifically the UDRP and the URS, do not include the registry operator in the dispute process, but instead call for dispute resolution providers that have been approved by ICANN as having the expertise necessary to adjudicate domain-name disputes to handle disputes. Finally, with vertical integration of registry operators and registrars now possible, the potential for a conflict of interest exists if registry operators continue to be in the first level of the TDRP. Consistent handling of cases by subject matter experts, i.e. dispute resolution providers approved by ICANN, has the potential to improve the overall TDRP process. So let's unpack this here for a moment. In general, I believe that they're supportive of our recommendation as it stands. They're offering a number of, justifications for that position. First off, noting, as we have, that the number of operators is increasing, so that could generate inconsistencies. Secondly, the expense. We noted that one in our discussions as well. Thirdly, and I think this, is perhaps new, that if we are to align the dispute mechanism here, TDRP with UDRP and URS, those do not include a first-level dispute with the registry, so this is consistent policy structure with those other procedures. And I think this last part is definitely new, the idea that a vertically integrated registry operator could be conflicted in the event that a dispute occurs in a vertically integrated TLD. I hadn't thought of that one. I think that that's interesting and something that we perhaps, I don't remember discussing it on the call, Lars or Marika, if you guys are aware of any opening of this of this topic, but Barbara thinks that's is a new one as well to her memory. So, so overall, I think these are good comments. And in general, there's no action required because they're supportive of our recommendation. The next comment number 18, coming from Arthur, I would encourage the IRPP. The working group to consider to recommend removing the fees (keep the fines) as they can currently are seen by us as prohibitive. Registrars starting procedures in vain or without good cause can be warned, fined, and ultimately deaccredited based on the RAA. I feel GTRD registries should take more responsibility in order to deal with this. Ultimately, they are responsible for their database, not others, even if it's a thin registry. So this is, I think, a reminder to us that one topic that we've left open is the discussion of the economic impact of this change, that the rarely used registry level, first level that we're recommending be done away with, is much less expensive than going the route to the independent, the independent party dispute, third-party dispute providers. And, you know, what impact might that have on the use or disuse of this particular procedure if the fee structure has changed dramatically? Does it become a barrier to using this process? I think that you could possibly make the case that if price were a barrier, that we would have seen more of these cases open at the first level than we have, as we indicated. It's a very rarely used process. I think what Arthur is saying here is something different, however. It's talking about fines for registrars that appear to be abusing the process. And I'm not sure if he's stating registrars that are just exclusively registrars that are initiating these disputes versus those who are frequently found to be on the losing side of the disputes. For disputes that are brought against them. Anyway, thoughts, comments on this particular recommendation, or is this just more, more fodder for that larger discussion about the fee structure of this the downstream impact of this recommendation? Nobody has any strong feelings when we're talking about money and fees and fines and. Okay. Christine, go ahead.
This is Christine from MIV. I have a question on the fining thing because I'm not, really well versed in the RAA. But is there actually, processes for ICANN to warn, fine, and, obviously de-accredit, but warn and fine registrars?
Not that I'm aware
of. And in conjunction with, RTP? Okay.
Yeah, I'm not really aware of any specific fines. I know that we have an SLA now for who is performance, but even exceptions to that SLA, I don't think there are financial sanctions as part of that enforcement.
Okay, so this is you're viewing this comment as sort of a suggestion that I can add that to the RAA. I mean, only because I'm not seeing any. I mean, the TDRP doesn't have any. I mean, fees is a different issue, which I think we need to eventually address. But fines and I guess, deaccreditation or whatever against registrars, that's not written in anywhere to my knowledge. So I'm a little bit confused by this comment myself.
Well, I was thinking perhaps, Christine, that the commenter was raising the idea of loser pays. Is that where he may be going with this?
Oh, it sounds like just as reasonable a suggestion as anything else.
Well, it doesn't really jive with the second part of the comment, though, so that's why I'm kind of just questioning, scratching my head a little bit here. I think we can capture this. I mean, I think that a lot of it here, the last sentence, is certainly, more adding some background or some color to the comment. I think it's the first bit here talking about fees or fines that's got the rest of us confused. My recommendation would be that we revisit this comment when we have that more fulsome discussion about the impact on fees with regard to this recommendation and whether or not that will create a barrier to this policy for use by registrants. And perhaps if we, as part of the previous recommendation, if we think it's part of IRTPC implementation, then maybe we need to discuss what the fees how the fees would be handled for something like that. So maybe that's the more appropriate place to discuss this. But I'm with you on this one, Christine, and if anyone else can shed some light here, I'm not really clear what fines are being discussed unless it is more of a discussion of the loser-pays model. And if we're still stuck when we discuss fees, then we can certainly perhaps ask staff to reach out to the commenter and see if we can get some clarification on those points. Okay, so if there are no other comments on item number 16, I'm sorry, item number 18, we can move on to recommendation 10. Working group recommends ICANN create and maintain one-stop website containing all relevant information concerning disputed transfers and potential remedies to registrars. And then there's a list of items that could be included as well as some links there. Let's see what the we have a few comments on this. The first one is from Arthur. In general, yes, this is a good idea, but a lot of text on the ICANN website needs to be shortened and simplified because it uses way too much text and acronyms to explain something simply. This not only applies to the transfer FAQs, which are actually directly linked from the homepage, a good step, but also to the registrant's rights and responsibilities and other policies like WDRP, ERRP, who is the accuracy spec, which are not explained to the public at all. While missing, bouncing one of these emails means your website and email are disabled for 50 days. And then he turns on the sarcasm tag here and says, always nice to find out when you get back from your holiday and learn that ICANN's positive, proactive way your domain name is disabled. Sarcasm tag off. Seriously, the ICANN website needs to educate text writers who can write in a more accessible way in layman's terms. The registrant impacting policy should have short pages no longer than one screen explaining each of them separately, answering important questions like, why is this policy here? How does it affect me? What can I do about it? So in general, I think that the comment is supporting our recommendation with the caveat that the language used on ICANN's website is not very accessible and often missing some key elements here, particularly with regard to the who is accurate specification, which is a much bigger fish that needs to be fried at some point here, because we, registrars need to help from ICANN to build awareness of that responsibility. So there's some color there from the commenter. But I don't think any action is required here except perhaps a note as part of our recommendation that should be easily accessible and easily translatable, if we have not already stated that somewhere in our recommendation. Any other thoughts on comment 19? Okay. Comment 20 from the ALAC. The term user-friendliness should be augmented comprehensively to make it clear that this site should be understandable to a registrant who does not have to deal with such problems on a regular basis. So reinforcing this concept of accessibility of the information and not using a lot of inside industry jargon or assuming that a registrant is familiar with the transfer process or the associated dispute mechanisms. I think that's good advice, and just kind of continues to pound that point home that we need to make sure that this is clear, not just full of alphabet soup. Comment 21 from the business constituency. In the interest of consumer protection, the BC recommends establishing requirements for registrars to publish information pertaining to transfer dispute resolution options available to registrars. BC supports the details of our position on Charter Question D that are encompassed into Recommendation Number 9 and Number 10. So I think that they're now circling back to one of the original points of discussion that was raised, which is the idea that registrars should also be required to link to this information or to publish information. We had a fairly lengthy discussion about this, and so I'm kind of looking to folks to help fill in the gaps in my memory. I know that we discussed this, and we discussed perhaps some best practices, we could certainly reopen the idea of requiring links to sort of a centralized and authoritative ICANN information repository. I think that just putting on a registrar hat here for a moment, I think registrars would be wary of requirements to duplicate the information because, of course, if it's not linked to it, then that runs the risk that we could be out of sync in terms of revisions. But anyway, what is the group thinking here about the BC the BC suggestion that we reopen the discussion about making this a requirement on registrars as well as guidance to ICANN? Seeing no hands. Not even any of the other registrars, Graham? No? Need to put people on the spot here. Okay, well, let's just move on. I think that, you know, I can respond as a registrar if it's appropriate to do so, and just note that I think that our recommendation certainly could include some best practices. The BC is asking for requirements. I think that registrars are still addressing some of the unintended consequences of publication of certain things from the RAA, for example, abuse email addresses that you know, have not necessarily worked out the way they were intended. But I don't think there's any particular issue as far as linking to an ICANN resource, for example, the way we are required to link to the registrant rights and responsibilities document. That is certainly something that we could consider. I would just not necessarily be excited about duplicating the information on multiple places because that's how discrepancies are born. Okay, so it looks like I'm just kind of talking to myself now, so we'll move on to question number 22. This is from ICANN staff. A note, it might be helpful for the working group to specify more details how to improve visibility and content. I agree, that's probably a little vague. I think that the other commenters perhaps provided a little more substance around these issues about accessibility, visibility, and content, ensuring that that the information that's provided is understandable to a non-industry insider who may experience a disputed transfer once or twice in the course of their career, and don't do this sort of thing on a daily basis. But we can certainly you know, build that out a little bit more, but I think that that also would be explored as part of the implementation of this recommendation. Okay. Decent points in the chat there, but I think that they're so far in agreement. So we can move to recommendation number 11. The working group recommends that as a best practice, ICANN create a registrar promptly display a link on their website. ICANN registrar help site. Registrars may choose to add this link to the section of the website already contains registrar relevant information, registrar rights and responsibilities, who is information, other relevant ICANN required links as noted under 316 of the RAA. And that is addressing the BC's comment to some extent. It circles back to comment number 21, where we said this is our recommendation as a best practice. Whether or not this should be a requirement is, I think, what the BC is asking. Comment number 23 from the ALAC, it is essential that, in addition to registrars, resellers be explicitly included in this recommendation. So I'm going to have to go and take a look, but I think there is a note in there in the section regarding resellers that says that all, you know, ICANN required bits and bobs, you know, need to be passed through to resellers as well. But I'll have to go back and take a look. Bob.
Yeah, James, are they referring here to resellers of ICANN accredited registrars like the, you know, Enom and Tucows, for example, they're resellers?
Yes, that's my understanding. Is ALAC is saying that anything that we recommend that registrars display, that we make the same recommendation to resellers.
So are they recommending then that there are direct communication between ICANN and the resellers, as opposed to routing those communications through the wholesale registrar?
Well, it's a good question, Bob. I think in the past, what is it that usually takes the shape of a pass-through where the registrar is required to inform their reseller that they have an obligation to do something. Now, in this case, I'm a little less clear because this is a best practice recommendation. So I think in that case, it would be a question of, we recommend that registrars consider doing this, and if you are going to do this, then we recommend that you make your resellers do it as well, something along those lines.
Yeah, my understanding, as well, is that wholesale registrars jealously guard the communication with the resellers, and so I would think that any communication best practice or otherwise would be, probably routed through the wholesaler. Maybe that's, something they should weigh in on in this case. It sounds like it's very relevant to their traditional practices.
I agree. And I did find here the 3.12.7 of the RAA, which I will copy for those of you who do not have the RAA tattooed on the side of your eyeballs. I will copy that into the chat here. But essentially it says it's specific to the registrant's benefits and responsibilities spec that says registrars shall require resellers to publish it on their websites. And I think that, Bob, I think that does fairly prescriptively say, this communication, registrars must require this resellers to communicate this to registrants. So it does not have that direct registrar to registrant communication.
That makes sense.
So I think that we can maybe make a note here on comment 23 that, since this is a best practice, that we would recommend that registrars who use resellers also consider making this a requirement or making this a suggestion or whatever to their resellers as well. Okay. Any other thoughts on this one? Recommendation number 12. The working group recommends no additional penalty provisions be added to the existing policy. The working group concludes that the penalty structures introduced in the 2009 RAA and the 2013 RAA are sufficiently nuanced to deal with IRTP violations. Number 24, financial penalties. This is from Arthur. Financial penalties are almost always efficient when dealing with registrars violating policy. Alternatively, ICANN compliance has enough tools as it is for those registrars unfazed by fines. I think that Arthur is in a kind of a roundabout way supporting this recommendation and agreeing with the justification for it, while also advocating for the effectiveness of financial policy, the financial penalties of policy violations. I did think of one, it didn't come up here, but I did think of one exception to this recommendation that already exists, and that's the ad grace period violation thing, limits policy, where it actually has a specific financial penalty attached, but I think that was targeted to a specific behavior, so it maybe made a little more sense in that policy than it does here, but that's just something to think about. Comment number 25 from the BC. The BC believes there should be penalties for specific violations other than notice of breach. The BC hopes that the 2013 RAA will address this issue. BC supports the details. Our position on charter questions either encompass recommendation 11 and 12. I think that it's very clear that there are compliance mechanisms, something short of notice of breach. For example, a registrar can be suspended by ICANN compliance, which is something short of the breach. So that's I think that we have seen some of those new compliance tools in action in the real world. And I think those are actually introduced under the 2009 RAA. They're just continued in the 2013 RAA. Any other thoughts or questions or concerns about these two recommendations? Okay, moving then to recommendation 13. Working group recommends GNSS consensus policy should avoid policy-specific sanctions. And there were, I'm checking with Lars, there were no comments received under that, correct? Okay, green.
That is correct, yeah.
Hey, folks, just to let you know, the UPS guy is walking up to my door, so bear with me because the dog is about to bark. I'm wondering if, Lars, you could help me out. I'll go on mute here, and I wonder if you could maybe read comment number 27 from the BC, which is our recommendation to maintain and preserve FOAs.
No problem, James. I can do that, although I'd be very keen for you to reading out comment number 28. As you'll see when you scroll down. Recommendation 14, the working group recommends to maintain FOAs. In the day-to-day administration of the FOAs are redundant. However, in cases involving unauthorized transfer requests in which the registered name holder's email address has been hijacked or its access credentials to the control panel have been stolen, the gaining registrar's obligation to obtain the FOA from either the registered name holder or the admin contact can help protect the domain names from being hijacked, given the registered name holder's WHOIS contact information is different from the admin contact. The BC supports the details of our position on charter question F that is encompassed in recommendation number 13. They refer to number 14. We did some reordering of the numbering, so they're referring to this recommendation.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate you your indulgence there. So it seems like on the surface that this comment aligns fairly closely with the working group's recommendations and our discussions on this topic. That the FOAs are, for the most part, just a redundant piece of paperwork. However, when something goes wrong with the transfer or something is claimed to be unauthorized, they can serve to help untangle the sequence of events and determine whether or not a transfer was legitimate or whether it was an unauthorized or fraudulent transfer. I'm trying to see here if there's something that we need to take away, and I'm just reading through it here again about the note about the registered name holder and the admin contact email being different. So I'm trying to, anybody have any insights on that here? I'm trying to figure out if that is something new that we had not discussed previously. I think what they're saying is because the registered name holder trumps the authorization of the admin contact, that if their contact information is different, then it serves as an additional safeguard against a hijacking or an ability to undo a hijacking. But if anyone sees any is reading that any differently, please let me know. Okay. All right, and you wanted me to read number 28, and I think it's because it's so long. Is that why?
That is correct.
Gosh, holy cow, look at that thing. That is not a comment excerpt. That is a... okay, let's see if we can unpack comment number 28 here. Here's the issue we disagree on in report 5261. Observations are made by compliance that FOAs are essential to help resolve dispute and reverse it if appropriate. It is for this reason that ICANN compliance also expressed its support for maintaining. Can I ask Lars, before I just dive into this multi-page comment here, with only 8 minutes left in the call, I think that we need to look at ways to break this up, because it looks like he's quoting, the commenter is quoting a larger report, an excerpt of a larger report. So where does that end? Does that end? He's referencing something that was submitted by Lyons, in the report 5261, observations by compliance. Where does that observation by compliance end? Because I don't think it's useful for me to just read this out to the into the record. I mean, it's like War and Peace here.
Yeah, I have a very bad news there. So it ends actually even on still on page 9 of the dispute.
Okay, so this is not the whole...
We have to read the whole comment at some point. No, unfortunately, it's not the whole, that's not the whole thing.
All right.
He's basically putting out a rather lengthy argument of why FOAs should be maintained, as a spoiler alert. But
it says in the first, in the opening bit, that he does not agree that FOAs should be maintained. He does not agree with our recommendation. But then the argument is that it should be maintained.
No. They should be abandoned. Is what he argues.
I see. Okay. Okay. And it looks like if you go to
can I just make a quick side note. If you scroll down to the final comment, on this recommendation, which is also a fairly lengthy one, albeit nowhere near this. From ICANN and compliance, I submitted the comment from Arthur to compliance because I realized it was, you know, he puts out a lengthy argument, and it's again something that the working group has fairly unanimously, so far as I'm concerned, or non-controversially recommended, albeit preliminarily. And compliance has provided an answer in 29 addressed specifically on this issue, and why compliance also believes that. Notwithstanding Arthur's argument that the FOAs should be maintained.
Okay, so if I'm understanding correctly, comment number 29 is a response to the submission of comment number 28 to compliance.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously not a response because it's not for compliance to respond, but it's their view on his argument, if you want. It's their comeback or their answer to the points that Arthur brings forward.
Okay. And what I was going to point out is, rather than, you know, just, you know, children gather around while I read you a bedtime story sort of long comment, I was thinking that we could capture the essence of the comment in these enumerated points, A through F. We could just take a look at those. I think that allows, these are the enumerated lists are... he's pointing out, I think he introduces it by saying that the way the transfer proceeded, the way I described it in the full report, I, being James Flagel, describes in the full report, is incomplete. Please allow me to add some important elements pertaining to the FOA and other elements. And then he's laying out here the sequence of the transfer process as he sees it. I'm trying to find a way that we can capture what he's saying here without going through this entire thing. Does anybody have any suggestions, or are we just going to have to brute force our way through this one next call?
I mean, sorry, James, this is last if I may. If you scroll
down,
Lars,
page, we've got...
Sorry, yes. If
go
you
ahead,
scroll
and then
down
we've got
page...
Bob.
Yeah, if you go to page 12, the third to last paragraph, I suppose, I'll just quickly get you all there. It says that currently three factors are required. He kind of sums it up there in that last paragraph, although there's some additional information about. I'm happy to provide a shorter summary of this for next week if you'd like to, but I think for the purpose of, I mean, we only got 4 minutes. It sums it up at the bottom there.
Well, we're very near the end here. I'll give Bob the last word. We're near the end of our call. We're near the end of reviewing these comments. So for next week, can we maybe tee it up here and ask you know, if we can parse this thing, boil it down to maybe just two or three succinct paragraphs here I think it's understood that he believes that the FOAs are dinosaurs and we need to get rid of them. Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, I would agree with you, James. I think Arthur obviously put a fair bit of time into drafting his argument, so I think it would be fair to, you know, give it its due. Also, though, just a general comment. I think in the past we've had members of this working group who are quite opposed to things that would dilute the security of domains. You know, Mikey O'Connor, to be specific, but you know, representing the domain owner's interests. So I would think that you know, given the in the general philosophy of the working group, in previous discussions along these lines, I think we'd want to be very careful before we remove anything that would contribute to domain security and the security of domain owners. Just as a general comment, on Arthur's recommendation here.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. I think that's exactly what allowed us all to arrive at our original recommendation, which is, you know, hey, these things are just another piece of bureaucratic paperwork, except, in that one in a 100,000, one in a million, whatever, shot where you need to undo something or piece together a transfer after the fact. So let's propose that comment 28 and 29, I see comment 30, the last comment is really just a general note of support from the ALAC, so I don't think that there's really anything to discuss there. But comment 28 and 29 deal with this issue of FOAs. Let's tee those two up for next week. We will start our call with those, and then we will take a look at definitions afterwards. But I think that, yeah, if we can ask Lars and, you can go ahead and throw something. I'm sure you've got pictures you can throw darts at or something for me asking this, but if you could maybe take a look at this, make sure that we're capturing Arthur's concerns and that we are being true to his sentiments and information he's introducing into this conversation, and that's all adequately captured. We will then address that, and then we'll put the ICANN statement under a microscope as well, from the statement from compliance, and then we'll determine what our path forward is on those two points. In general, I think we did very well. We got through the entire comment tool except for those two remaining outstanding items. We can do next week, same time. We'll tee those two up, and then we're getting close to where we can do a second pass and see what remaining to-do items are on our list to incorporate into our final report. So thanks, everyone, for your help and excellent contributions to this effort and one step closer to the finish line. So have a great Monday, everyone.
Thank you, James.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, James.
Thank you, everyone, for joining today's meeting. Brian, if you could please stop the recordings.